This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankowski. John DeStefano is once again running for mayor of New Haven. If he wins, it'll be his 10th term in office. Four Democrats are challenging him in the September 13th primary. Tonight, the New Haven Independent, in partnership with WNPR and several other media organizations, is sponsoring a debate between the five men running for mayor of the Elm City. It takes place at 7 p.m. at the Metropolitan Business Academy. I'll have more information throughout the show. Now, I'll be live blogging the event for newhavenindependent.org, along with others. WNPR's Uma Ramayo will also be there asking questions of the candidates. If you can't make it there in person, you can stream the debate at NBCConnecticut.com, and you can also follow along on the New Haven Independent site or on ouryourpublicmedia.org. Today, Where We Live, we'll preview tonight's event and discuss the issues ahead for New Haven. We want to hear from you, especially if you're a New Haven voter, if you live in one of the surrounding towns. What's the most pressing concern for your city? What candidate do you think is right for the job? You can join us 860-275-7266. You can email wherewelive@wnpr.org. You can go to our website, WNPR.org, keyword where, as well. Joining us from the New Haven studios are Paul Bass. He's, of course, the editor and the creator of the New Haven Independent. Paul, welcome back to the show.
Hi, John. Nice to be with you.
Yeah, good to be with you as well. Uma Ramayo works for WNPR and has been working for the New Haven Independent and Connecticut Mirror over the course of the last year in a fellowship. Uma, good to hear from you again.
Good morning, John.
So, first of all, Paul, maybe you can explain what exactly is going on tonight so we can set the stage for what's happening.
Well, tonight is going to be sort of the big formal public launch of the campaign season in New Haven this year, which is a one in every 10-year event in New Haven, which is that we have a real election, because most of the time New Haven is a one-party city where nobody challenges anybody and everyone goes to sleep at election time. We're actually having five people at the moment running for mayor, and we also have an Arab Spring sort of going on here where all these people are running for the Board of Aldermen, which is our city council, which is usually also a pretty sleepy affair. We have at least 16 races going on at the time, and there are all these constituencies in town that are positioning from the labor unions, from taxpayer groups. So it's a lot of fun, and tonight we're going to have a debate, the first debate with all the candidates, and it's going to be a multimedia event, as you just mentioned, John. It's going to be at the Metropolitan Business Academy on Water Street, New Haven, that brand new school that's about 95 different shapes that you see when you come off the highway.
That funky-looking school that you can see from the connector road, right?
Yeah, people use a lot of adjectives for the design of that school.
I think it's kind of cool, but anyway, go ahead.
It's interesting. And we're going to be in the cafeteria. And then people can be involved. You, listening to this right now, can be involved in a number of different ways. You can come. It's free. You can watch it live stream. As you said, NBC 30 is going to do a live stream that's going to be on the website, so you can watch it on NPR, Your Public Media, New Haven Independent, NBC 30, and the New Haven Register. You can also be part of the discussion as the debate is going on, because while there'll be five journalists asking questions of the candidates, there are going to be another five journalists, including you, John, who will be talking about it as it occurs on a live blog, a chat. And that is also going to be on all those websites I mentioned. So, you know, we're all multitasking these days. So while you're watching the video of the debate, you can see what John and the other journalists, Melissa Bailey and others, Angie Carter-DeRedz, they're saying to each other. And then you can join that conversation while it takes place. And we did an event like this with you before, John, with Diane Ravitch in New Haven, where people actually were sitting in the audience with their laptops watching the event and then asking questions of people who were on that panel and to each other and the readers back home while it was going on. So it's a lot of fun.
I'll say it is a lot of fun, and there's a lot of balls in the air, but there's a great discussion going on. And just by way of a little bit of promotion for you too, Paul, this sort of thing that you folks do, including the Ravitch event, you won a national award for this sort of multimedia event, didn't you?
Yeah, we did just win that for the work we had done on some of those events. We're all trying to figure out how to deal with the too much information age. Remember way back in the old information age, everyone was excited. There was a lot of data coming forward. You get more information. Remember, John, in the old days, we'd want to see how much someone gave to a candidate. We'd drive up to Hartford and photocopy a million pages. Now we press two buttons and see who every PAC is and every corporate donor.
Yeah.
Well, now everyone's trying to wade through all this information. And what we're trying to do with these events is, how do we use the new media not to have more noise, but to actually have a moderated, intelligent, and democratic conversation? So what you'll see tonight in that live blog, Melissa Bailey from The Independent is going to be moderating it, is it's not just everyone throwing a lot of data together. It's that the conversation is moderated. There's a Thomas McMillan from our Independent site is going to be looking at the comments before they go up, and it's going to be focused on the topic in hand. It's going to be linked to stories that have already been written. So how do we take all this flood of data and voices that come on through comments on web pages, through contributions that people make through the web, through all the technology of the live stream, and people talking in person. And how do you make that into a coherent conversation? We felt we did do that with the event we had on school reform when Diane Ravitch, the author, came to Cobb High School, and all the different players in school reform talked about her book and how school reforms work in New Haven. And we're at the early stages of this, but I think that's the new challenge nationally, not just in New Haven. It's such an exciting time with new media. People listening to the show, people go on the web, people come public and have all these devices. We have all these gizmos and all this access to information that could make us more civic participants in our society, but we have the danger of being flooded and misinformation and nastiness that rules on a lot of public sites that have discussions, so it just becomes a nasty shouting match rather than intelligent conversation. What we're trying to do is we're trying to figure out how to make the conversation civil, smart, and more democratic than anything we've ever seen. And that's what's fun about it.
Yeah, and it's going to be in action tonight at 7 o'clock for this New Haven mayoral debate. That's what we're previewing today on the program. Paul Bass joins us from the New Haven Independent. He's in our New Haven studios today, along with WNPR's Uma Ramaya, who will be on the panel asking questions of the candidates. We want to hear from you at 860-275-7266. Again, 860-275-7266. What are the big issues facing New Haven as we go into yet another election here? So, Paul Bass, why is it different this year? You say about every 10 years this is actually somewhat interesting. Why so many challenges to John DeStefano? Why all these people running for alderman seats? What's going on?
A few things are going on, John. Is that one thing is that just John DeStefano has been mayor for 18 years. And we're in a very anti-incumbent mood in this country right now. You notice Bridgeport's got a race, Hartford. And people, you know, even in the other countries, whether it's Egypt, or, you know, the Arab Spring, people are just questioning leaders who have been there a long time. So at this point, when especially in tough economic times, people just get mad at the person in charge. I mean, you would not believe how many times someone goes out of business, someone gets a parking ticket. Everyone just gets mad at the mayor. He's just the face of the city. And that's one reason. That's just after someone's been there a long time, especially in the current climate, a lot of people are going to line up. And there's also been this dichotomy in New Haven. We have very good times in some way. We're the leading city in the state in terms of pursuing school reform. We've actually got all this new construction and new job creation in our city at a time when everybody else is sucking wind. And it's just we've had this good moment. We've done a lot of good planning on it. At the same time, we've had a decline in community policing, an uptick in murders, especially of African-American males. People are feeling budget pressure, even though our financial situation is much stronger than that in most cities in the country right now. In the current economic crisis, it's still tough times. We still have the same problems of old pension obligations that politicians, including John DeStefano, have struck that we can no longer afford. And some of those tough decisions are making it hard for people. So between the, there's a feeling that there hasn't been enough democracy in town, in a one-party city for a long time. You have tough economic times, an anti-incumbent climate, and some crime problems and budget pressures. At the same time, as it's an interesting debate because a lot of good things are happening in New Haven, including school reform, including the downtown's revival, and some good stuff happening in neighborhoods and some housing developments and business development.
Uma Ramaya, what's the feeling from the work that you've been doing there in New Haven as someone who lives there and has been taking a look at the city, covering the city for a number of different organizations over the course of the last year? What's the feeling amongst the people that you're talking to about New Haven? Is there some change that's being asked for?
You know, I think that question kind of falls into two categories. There are the people who are chomping at the bit for change because, as Paul said, DeStefano's been in power for 18 years, and they know they have this kind of sense that everything that's wrong with New Haven is his fault. Mm. So they want some change, but they don't necessarily know where to look for it. Then there are these four interesting campaigns that are springing up that, you know, some of them have kind of a great deal of momentum, and they have a number of volunteers, they have energy, they've ostensibly all collected the number of signatures they need to get on the primary ballot, which was, I'm sure we'll talk about later, was kind of a big feat. But, you know, there was a volunteer in Jeffrey Kirikese's campaign headquarters yesterday who said, you know, this is the first time in 10 years I've ever been able to get behind someone who I think may actually have a chance at this election. So, you know, on one hand, there are people who don't even know who the candidates are, but they do want change. And on the other hand, there are people who think that these four guys may actually pose a real threat to DeStefano. So there's an excitement about that as well.
You actually profiled the gentleman, Jeffrey Karakis. Karakis? I'm not sure how to pronounce his last name.
Karakis.
Karakis.
It's a Bicewicz thing, John.
Oh, okay. That's once we learn it, everyone will know it. So Uma, you got a chance to talk with him. He did get supposedly the right number of signatures, and he seems enthusiastic. What do you think all this means, the fact that people are out there signing a petition? That doesn't necessarily mean all these people are going to show up and vote for him, though.
No, exactly. And you know, one of the shocking things I've learned covering this campaign is that in the last few years, voter turnout in New Haven has been astonishingly low. And so I think that, you know, part of the energy that's coming from these campaigns may boost that a little bit. And the fact that, you know, the fact that there are, you know, three or four viable candidates will probably, I think we'll see a much larger turnout. Jeffrey Karakis also has this kind of incredible amount of energy. Tony Dawson does as well, Clifton Graves, and Robert Lee. So, you know, and they have this support base, whether or not it's small, you know, there are people out there talking about them, getting their name out there. So, you know, I think we might see a little bit of a shift.
Paul Bass, what are these other candidates running on? They're all very different people, but what are they saying to people to try to get them to vote some way other than John DeStefano come primary time?
Karakis is that sort of modern, non-politician, independent voice person that you might have seen Mike Peters in Hartford years ago, Jesse Ventura in Minnesota. Very different personality from those guys, but it's that same feeling. So he's a psychotherapist. He lives in the Worcester Square area. He renovated this old bottling plant from the 1800s. It's back from the street. You know, classic kind of urban New Haven person, is cited by the city, moved here 8 years ago, started reading about some of the issues in town, got interested, went to public meetings, read up on it pretty fast, and felt that there wasn't responsiveness in government. He felt that citizens who were interested in issues really had no way in, got very concerned about tax issues and budget issues, became the leader of a citizen organization that challenged the city on the budget. What was interesting about it was they actually changed how John DeStefano, the mayor, ran the city. John DeStefano is a pro-government person. He believes that sometimes you got to raise taxes, even though people hate that government can solve problems, sort of like Malloy. And then after he saw that outcry that Karakis helped organize, he didn't agree with it all, but he said, okay, people just don't want taxes to rise anymore. We're going to make some of these painful cuts, and that's what the city wants. And he did it. But, you know, he's an incumbent, been 18 years, so now people get mad at him when the cuts get made. And also, you know, the people felt it wasn't necessarily done democratically. Anyway, you could argue about the pros and cons of those issues, but now Karakis was in the game, no interest in running for office. All the A-team of politicians who could have beaten DeStefano this year, and again, without weighing pros or cons on DeStefano, everyone knows he would have lost if a state senator, let's say, who had a campaign organization, access to money, name recognition, would have run. But none of them ran. So Karakis kind of got pushed in when nobody else did, and he had that base. So let's say on the East Shore of New Haven, where people are mad about the taxes, he's won ward committee endorsements in East Rock, where you have these politically active newer generation of civic activists who care about bicycle safety and transparent government aren't as tied to party. Meanwhile, the black community has been frustrated. That's a different vote. And they in Dixwell neighborhood, New Hallville neighborhood, felt that this crime, it's a tough nut, what's happening with the young males getting shot in New Haven. It's out of control. And people feel that community policing has gone backwards in New Haven, and there's not this confidence in the police, and stuff's not getting solved. So now Clifton Graves is someone who's been involved in civil rights work in New Haven for decades. Again, he has not run for office. He was involved in the watershed election in 1989 when New Haven elected its first black mayor, John Daniels. He's someone who had some name recognition. He knows people sort of involved in the civic sinew of the city. He's been involved in the Amistad organization with the boat. And he is the candidate supported by Wendell Harp, the husband of Tony Harp, the state senator, who has always been an important figure in New Haven politics for black candidates. He helped Lowell Weicker back in his election in terms of organizing the vote. He has a campaign headquarters, an organization that's turned out the vote in elections over the years. So that's that team, sort of black establishment, a name people know. Tony Dawson was an alderman for 16 years, a different neighborhood, The Hill. There's a little rivalry going on there. He didn't have the same kind of organization that Clifton Graves does, but he does have name recognition. He's someone who's involved since the Black Panthers day, even though he was just a kid in the Hill neighborhood where a lot of that kind of activism was going on. And he was an alderman for 16 years, and he's a security force at Yale, New Haven. And that's where the action's going to be, dividing that up. And we had an election like this in 1979, John, where there was an incumbent mayor who was a liberal, and there was a person running against them. The personalities are very different, but they got three candidates in the mix. There was a black candidate who split the vote with the liberal incumbent. So then with less than a majority, this third candidate emerged. There's a backstory there. He had been the police chief. He lost his job because he'd illegally wiretapped people, and he won on a resentment vote in the East Shore against liberals who didn't want to keep people under control. He saw the Frank Rizzo type, although he was a nice guy. And so while the personalities are completely different here,
yeah.
And now I'm getting to, I realize, political junkie land, suffice it to say that all the calculations are now thrown to the wind with these kind of different forces.
Well, but we've got to take a break. But one thing I just want to quickly ask you about, Paul, is you get into political junkie land and these names and the different constituencies, and some people listening across the state may think, well, why is this terribly important? Why it's important is, as Uma was suggesting earlier, these primaries really, Democratic primaries in a city like New Haven, they essentially are the election for mayor. And we're talking about, John DeStefano last time, Paul, getting less than 8,000 votes in a winning campaign.
That's right. Now there are 15,000 independents in New Haven. So this is about the future of cities and the future of urban politics, because there are actually two elections for the first time this year. We are going to have a general election because all these candidates, including labor-backed Aldermanic candidates and Carrickis, a lot of them are going to be on the November ballot too, running as independents. So why this is important is, A, what happens in our cities? B, will we have competitive politics again? C, how do we run a city in tough economic times? And D, can we take all these forces that are awakening in politics, a sort of shadow of what's happening around the world, and have it be meaningful rather than noise? Have it be about ideas and organization and policy that can come out of it rather than just frustration with the status quo.
We're talking with Paul Bass from the New Haven Independent and Uma Ramayo from WNPR. They're both taking part in a live mayoral debate that's happening tonight at 7 o'clock. We're going to be live streaming on yourpublicmedia.org. I'm going to be one of the live bloggers who's actually going to be taking part in the panel. It's a multimedia mayoral debate. We're previewing it today, and we want to hear from you right now. 860-275-7266. If you live in New Haven or the New Haven area, if you have questions about this very important city and its future, we want to hear from you. What are your thoughts? You can also email wherelive at WNPR.org or on Twitter, tweet us at wherelive. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Today, we're previewing a mayoral debate that's happening tonight in New Haven. John DeStefano is running again for mayor of New Haven, but he's being challenged by four other candidates. This debate is being sponsored by the New Haven Independent in partnership with WNPR and several other media organizations. NBC Connecticut is live streaming it, and you can find it in a number of places. I'll actually be on a live blogger panel that will be there on stage asking questions, maybe taking some audience questions. Uma Ramayo from WNPR will be asking questions of the candidates. It's all put together by Paul Bass from the New Haven Independent. He joins us in the studio in New Haven today, as well as Uma Ramayo. And we're taking some of your calls and questions in just a moment at 860-275-7266. As we talk about the future of the city of New Haven and the current situation there, as John DeStefano gets ready to maybe take office one more time, but now he's got a little bit more of a challenge on his hands. Again, 860-275-7266. Paul and Uma, maybe you could both weigh in on this idea that New Haven is this place for many of us around the state of prosperity. It's a turnaround city. It has such a vibrant nightlife. It has places where you can go and enjoy, and people really view New Haven in one very particular way if you're coming from outside the city these days. And then if you live in the city, especially in certain neighborhoods, as you already suggested, Paul, in the African American community, there are young black men and women getting shot all the time. It's a very, very big problem right now. Why, Paul, this disconnect between what's happening in the neighborhoods of New Haven and how the rest of the world seems to view it right now?
New Haven's part of a country in which cities have been, urban policy has basically abandoned cities. We've had foreclosure crises. In one neighborhood, there's the most shootings, New Hallville. While everybody had one wave of foreclosures, we had two waves of foreclosures there, where out-of-town speculators snapped up houses. Some of them did mortgage fraud. Some are actually going to jail for that. Some prominent people, where they got money for houses they never put into the houses, just pocketed, and everything runs down. You have hardcore structural unemployment for people. You know, our society is moving that way, where there's a real employment challenge for people who don't have advanced education. Our schools, until recently, there was not much effort into making them good. That has changed now. So I think that what's different about New Haven is we have this other side of the city that we eds and meds, you know, that phrase for urban economies that are built on educational institutions and medical institutions, those have done pretty well in the recession, and those are doing pretty well in the future of how city job employment creation is going to happen. And we have a spinoff of that with some of the high tech sector. There's a company called Hire One that does bursar back office operations for universities. Those are creating jobs. And also we had some projects in the pipeline, a $1.5 billion citywide campaign to rebuild schools. Yale University, right before the recession, went on a tear rebuilding its place. Yale New Haven built a cancer hospital. We just built the state's largest residential mixed-use tower downtown. And that all came with money that was in the pipeline, including that tower, which was union pension funds. But that money was still available when the crash hit. So all of a sudden, all this work was going on. And then culturally, you have this great interaction between a city with diverse, strong neighborhoods with wonderful traditions and Yale University, which over the since a fatal shooting on Hill House Avenue in 1990 woke up Yale University to get rid of its moat and become part of the city. There's been a flowering of that relationship that has translated to a lot of economic development and cultural development in the city.
And a big way that that's translated, Umar Ramai, is the New Haven promise. I mean, Yale essentially saying to the young people of New Haven, we want to get more involved in the education system moving forward. How has the New Haven promise been welcomed by the community, and is that something that's been talked about in this campaign so far?
Yeah, you know, the promise, and as you said, John, it's a promise that was... It's funded by Yale in large part. It's endorsed by Mayor DeStefano, and it promises that any student who meets a certain GPA requirement and attendance requirement, lives within the city of New Haven and goes to New Haven Public School, will get full tuition to go to a state school within Connecticut. So it is what the title, you know, suggests. It's a promise that students will have kind of greater access to college. On one level, this has been greeted with just elation and joy and excitement. Students are excited, parents are excited. The administration is certainly pushing this as something that could really change New Haven. On the other hand, there are some groups that say, you know, this is fine, but how do we get students to that point where they will, you know, have that attendance record, where they can meet these requirements, where they'll have those GPAs? Are we addressing the structural issues in these neighborhoods that are keeping kids from achieving these things? And if we're not, it's not enough to throw money at the top. So there's a little bit of a pushback, but on a general level, I think there's a great amount of excitement. It's going to take a few years to really see, you know, what's going to happen with the New Haven Promise, I think.
We're taking phone calls at 860-275-7266 as we get ready for a mayoral debate in New Haven tonight that's being sponsored by the New Haven Independent that we're taking part in here at WNPR and your public media. Questions about New Haven, thoughts about how to remake cities, that's what's on the table today on Where We Live, 860-275-7266. Ed's in Middletown. Hey, Ed, you're on Where We Live.
Hey, John, how are you?
Doing well.
Sorry that this is not about New Haven, but it's about Middletown because there's an analogous situation here where the entrenched Democratic leaders are being challenged by an outsider Democrat in a town where there has been a political squabble since the Republican mayor took office about 6 years ago. So, and people are seeming to be dissatisfied with the kind of politics that has kept progress from happening in this town, and they see it being attached to the same kind of arguments that are happening in Washington at this moment.
It really is in Middletown, maybe in New Haven. Ed, you believe that it has something to do with an anti-incumbency, just a hope for change right now in the city?
I think it's less about anti-incumbency. I think it's more about the fact that the parties have taken specific positions and refused for ideological reasons to back down from those positions.
Ed, thank you very much for your phone call. Now, Paul Bass, one thing that's interesting there, of course, in Middletown and a lot of other cities, especially smaller towns, not the big cities in Connecticut, there are actually, you know, Republicans who run for things. In New Haven, that's not really so much the case. Well, is there any sort of movement from Republicans, from other parties, or is this really about Democrats of different stripes trying to run the city?
For now, it's about Democrats. It will include independents, but forget Republicans. Republicans are outnumbered. Registered Republicans in New Haven, 18-1. The last time we elected a Republican mayor, 1951. This year, they are not running anyone for mayor. There are 30 seats on the Board of Aldermen. They have one candidate, and they have one member out of those 30. However, the 15,000 independent voters in New Haven can be a potential force. But as with Middletown, as with changes all over the world, We have to look at whether change and a desire for change is ever going to coalesce into meaningful political organization and philosophy, or whether it's just going to be random frustration. So in New Haven, John DeStefano was elected with 7,700 votes. You alluded to that last time. There are 15,000 independents. Clearly, there's a potential to tap into an independent-minded desire, and a lot of Democrats would call themselves independents too. And there are pluses and minuses to this new trend to go away from political parties. Some people think that you lose a coherent vision that voters can choose among, that it becomes all about personalities. It becomes, candidates become unmoored from obligations to constituents. Other people think it frees, like your caller, that independent politics will free candidates to look at issues with a fresh perspective.
And we're going to take some phone calls here at 860-275-7266. Although I should say we had at least one caller who, perhaps in all of my excitement about the multimedia aspects of Paul Bass's great debate, I've been mentioning that it's an actual live thing that people can go to enough. It's at 7 o'clock at the Metropolitan Business Academy. In case you don't know what the Metropolitan Business Academy in New Haven is, it's that crazy-looking building that's just off the Route 34 connector that you can see from the highway there. I think it's kind of cool-looking. A lot of people from New Haven don't agree. That's not exactly what the show's about today, but that's where it is tonight, 7 p.m. at the Metropolitan Business Academy in New Haven. Of course, you can also go online at New Haven Independent and find out more. One more quick phone call here from Aaron in New Haven. Hey, Aaron, you're on Where We Live.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I live in New Haven, and I live down in Morris Cove, and I have a new family. Just had a baby this year, and I have a lot of friends who have new families that also live down in Morris Cove. And maybe we're wrong when we think this, but we are starting to talk to other people that have kids in the town and in our neighborhood. And it seems as if getting our child into a local elementary school is not a guarantee. New Haven has a lottery. So not only may my kids not go to the school that I live 5 minutes away from, but also my neighbors who my child will be friends with, we all might end up at different schools. Doesn't seem right.
So, Aaron, let me put you on hold so you can listen to Paul Bass. What do you say to Aaron? Because I'm not very familiar with
Aaron.
How
is bringing
that works.
Up.
Yeah.
Aaron is bringing up one of the most explosive political issues in town. And by the way, Aaron, mazel tov on your child.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
I mean, I had two children who went through the public schools. One of them had a very good experience. One was medium. I mean, New Haven has some good schools, but every parent panics, every parent who cares about the kids' education, because right or wrong, people feel there are only a handful of schools they can send their kids to where they'll get any kind of decent education. One of those is 5 minutes from Aaron's house. So yes, those slots fill up fast. There are lotteries where people have complained they weren't transparent. Sometimes that's been true, sometimes it hasn't been. They've made it a lot more transparent. It's just confusing rules. But the fundamental problem is not the lottery. The fundamental problem for young families like Aaron's is they feel they can't send their kids to the schools. That's why New Haven has embarked on one of the nation's most interesting school reform programs. And the reason it's interesting to me, John, is that unlike in other cities, let's say New York, where they take just pro-charters, or other cities where it's just done traditional education with more money, they're experimenting with every promising idea in school reform in different places, rather than taking an ideological approach and doing it with a lot of energy and doing it with the support of the teachers union rather than fighting with the teachers union. So they're trying very hard and interesting ways to make New Haven schools better, but they were really in a bad place, and where you see it is in callers like Aaron, where people feel they don't have enough choices to get the kids to school. They panic about, do they have to know the right person, whether that's true or not, to get into the school 5 minutes from their house. But in most cases, it's not 5 minutes from their house. In most cases, they feel they can't send their kids to the school. Test scores are only one measure if a school's good. I think that's overrated as a measure, but obviously our test scores are very low. They've inched it up a little bit. There are some great teachers in New Haven. There are some great educational programs, but overall, this is a fundamental issue, and it could play both ways in this election, John. People are excited about all the changes taking place, or people will say, we've had a mayor for 18 years, and how did they get to that spot?
Yeah, and for folks like Aaron, you know, maybe some short-term panic, but again, what's happening in New Haven with the teachers' unions actually getting on board with the city in making some of these changes. It is quite a bit different than what you're seeing in a lot of other cities around America. The number is 860-275-7266. Again, you can email wherewelive at WNPR.org. I want to bring in our next guest by phone. Doug Ray is a professor of management and political science at Yale University. He's joined us to talk about issues of New Haven. He's written extensively on the city in the past. We reach him by phone today. Doug Ray, welcome back to Where We Live.
Good to be here.
Well, I appreciate you joining us very much. And so as we preview this debate tonight between John DeStefano and four people who are vying to take his seat, maybe you could give me your thoughts on the state of the city right now. Paul Bass seems to suggest a lot of people are looking for change or excited about this. What are you feeling in the city right now?
Well, I'm a big optimist about New Haven's future. And Paul earlier made reference to Eds and Meds. New Haven was a great industrial city, which hit its peak nearly 100 years ago and declined steadily over the period from World War I through the Great Depression into the end of the 20th century. But it's on an uptick, and it's been on an uptick for about 20 years in which are the DeStefano years, really. And that uptick is centered around the hospitals and Yale and around all the very creative spinoffs that come from them, and the adjustment of the city's government to being a very different kind of city is John DeStefano's great accomplishment.
And how much of that, though, because of the involvement of Yale University, really is credited to John DeStefano? At the end of the day, Doug Ray, I think many people look at the city's transformation and say, well, look, Waterbury, Hartford, Bridgeport, if we had Yale University in our backyards, we'd be on the uptick too.
Absolutely true. But there was a long period during which city government and the university misunderstood each other and fought pointless battles and missed enormous opportunities. The New Haven Promise story, or the Yale Homebuyer Program, are great examples where a more cooperative, let's get it done together attitude has created great value. Yale gets lots of credit for that and should get lots of credit for it. Bruce Alexander, Rick Levin, others have brought Yale through an important learning process about being an urban institution. But on the other side of it, I think you have to give DeStefano a certain amount of credit for having been an effective part of that discourse.
I want to go back to the phones, 860-275-7266, as we talk about New Haven, as we get ready for a mayoral debate tonight. Tim's in New Haven. Hi, Tim. You're on Where We Live.
Hi, John. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, what's up?
Thanks, as always, for covering New Haven. I am a Carica supporter, so I wanted to announce that before I make remarks critical of either our current mayor or of Doug Ray's recent comments. But I think the real issue for the city is really Yale's role. I left the city. I graduated from college 20 years ago, right around the time of that murder, a little after, that Paul mentioned. It was actually a classmate of mine who was killed. And there's no doubt that the city has improved significantly in that time and has become a lot safer downtown in particular. But that sort of hides the fact that we're on pace to have the most murderous year in our history. So to say that New Haven is in an uptick just doesn't tell the whole story. A similar sort of point would be that the day Yale announced the New Haven Promise Program, which is a wonderful thing, no one would argue with that. But the day they announced that program, they ended two teacher training programs that were aimed at training and equipping teachers for inner-city education. So what I see in Yale and what I see in the DeStefano administration as well, which certainly does work with Yale, no doubt about that, I see a retreat from dealing with the nuts and bolts of the city's problems and trying to sort of maybe paper things over. Sometimes with money, and money is great, but there's more of a need to come to terms with the mechanics of what makes the city work or what makes the city fail, and I see Yale actually retreating from that. Yeah, we'll pay for your education if you get to the point that you're ready for college. But the problem that the city faces is that there's lots and lots of kids who never get to that point and who really see no future for themselves. And I just don't see the DeStefano administration or Yale University engaging with that problem. You know, the different candidates each have different ways of speaking to that issue.
Yeah.
But I think the sum message is that we need something different, and we need a mayor who's going to challenge Yale a little bit to get involved in more specific ways with the city's various challenges. Thanks for.
Oh, no problem. And Tim, thank you very much for your phone call. You can join us 860-275-7266. So, Paul Bass, Tim gave us a lot to talk about. One is how the new mayor might challenge or work with Yale, a couple of different ways of looking at it. And then, of course, he also talked about the crime once again. Maybe first on the Yale aspect, do you see that as an issue that the new mayor has to find some new type of relationship with this very powerful university in his backyard?
Not a new relationship, but I think there's a quest for independent bases of power. So the other factor that we haven't discussed this year is that Yale's labor unions, which are the most important political force in the city, which is the force that actually had a lot to do with electing Dan Malloy governor, that is the only really independent base of voter support in this grassroots in this city outside of the Democratic machine. They're taking on the mayor and the machine this year. They're not taking them on overtly in the mayoral race, but they've produced a whole crop of new candidates for Board of Aldermen who are challenging the party establishment. And they've been a little unclear about how they want that relationship to be different from Yale. But on the ground, it would mean a more independent base on Yale. Although DeStefano has taken on Yale, that's a relationship of mutual respect. And I think that that's why we've seen some progress. But I think with both the caller and Doug's comments, and I thought they made excellent points, I think might have understated how important city government as an independent entity is. It's not just that Yale smartened up. That had a lot to do with the city getting better. But we also instituted community policing on our own. Actually, Doug Ray was a city official who helped bring that in. That, more than anything, made positive change possible in New Haven. Because when we're saying we're on track to have the most murders in our history, it would be the most murders since 1990, right before we instituted community policing. We had the most interesting community policing experiment in the country. It was about solving problems before they happened, have walking cops get to know neighborhoods, and not just look to put squeegee men in jail like New York. And it gave us one of the best rates in low violence in the country. That has been falling apart somewhat, but that made economic development possible. It made Yale keep professors. And immigration policy is not a Yale issue, it's a city issue. That is the other factor that has helped give a renaissance to New Haven and neighborhoods like Fairhaven. We have welcomed immigrants in a way that other cities in Connecticut have not. Danbury pushed out Ecuadorians. We now have this thriving Ecuadorian community that just had its flag raising last night, a parade this weekend, soccer leagues. They have the consulate here now. And you bring in a whole bunch of people who are not taking much from the state but are motivated to be here and have really rebuilt the economy in Fairhaven, which was one of our most crime-ridden and poorest neighborhoods. You go down Grand Avenue now, it's main drag, and you see a bustling commercial area, and you're seeing a workforce that's doing a good job. And we did that through a city policy of welcoming immigrants, not asking where they come from by direct order through police, an ID card so that you can be a citizen. So there are other factors besides Yale is important. Our relationship with Yale is important. This election, is especially outside the mayor's race, actually, is about somewhat our relationship with Yale. But more important is seeing city government as an independent entity in which citizens can play more of a role and use the potential to govern ourselves.
Paul Bass is from the New Haven Independent. They're sponsoring this very interesting debate tonight. It's a debate between John DeStefano and four other candidates for mayor of the city of New Haven. It's not only going to be live for you to attend, 7 p.m. at Metropolitan Business Academy, but it's also online at newhavenindependent.org. You can watch it on nbcconnecticut.com and also on WNPR's yourpublicmedia.org. We're joined by Paul Bass in studio in New Haven, Umar Ramaya from WNPR, who covers the city and is also going to be on a panel asking questions tonight. She joins us, as does Doug Ray, a professor of management and political science at Yale University. You can join us at 860-275-7266 with your thoughts and questions about the city of New Haven. This is where we live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Coming up tomorrow, we'll revisit a conversation about eating disorders. A recent study proves it's not just affecting a stereotype, the white affluent female, but also many minority groups, including Native American women. If you've struggled with eating disorders, hope you can join our conversation on air and online, WNPR.org, keyword where. Today, we're previewing a Democratic mayoral debate in New Haven. Paul Bass from the New Haven Independent is putting this together with a number of other media organizations. Umu Ramaya from WNPR is going to be on the panel asking questions. Doug Ray also joins us by phone. He's a professor of political science and management at Yale University. We're taking your phone calls at 860-275-7266. If you'd like to join us live in person for this debate, it's at 7 o'clock at the Metropolitan Business Academy in New Haven. And, of course, you can find out more online at newhavenindependent.org. There's a lot to talk about, and I want to get to some more questions. I quickly wanted to ask you, Doug Ray. Paul Bass brought up before the break about community policing. People are very interested right now, of course, in crime in the city. What do you think has happened to community policing in New Haven after such an auspicious start?
Well, I think it has been in decline, and I think it is possible to hold the DeStefano administration in some degree accountable for having taken their eyes off one of the very most important policy initiatives in the recent history of the city in community policing. I also think Paul's point about immigration and the welcoming of immigrant communities in New Haven is very important, and the vitality of Fairhaven, the Hill, for that matter, the downtown entertainment district is linked to New Haven's being a place where immigrants can thrive and begin to make their way in a new country.
Doug Ray, before I let you go, I want to ask one more thing that I know has been on the minds of a lot of people, not only in New Haven, but around the state, is the city is embarking on a plan to remake, renew this corridor that ripped at the heart of the city, Route 34, this connector. It's right next to where this the Business Academy, where we'll be holding the debate tonight, is. What do you think of the plans so far? How exactly do you think that this decision is going to impact the future of New Haven?
Well, the Route 34 connector was a disaster the day it was born. On the other hand, the mistake that was made 60 years ago in New Haven in city planning was environmental determinism, to say the configuration of streets, the designs of buildings, these are the things that make a city work. And it wasn't true then and isn't true now. We can make improvements in that plan, and they're worthwhile, but the essential things are the ones that involve people. And the school system ought always to have a higher priority than street planning. Similarly, the approach to immigrant communities should have a higher priority. So I'm in favor of it, but I don't think that the reconfiguration of street patterns is likely to be transformative for the city.
Good stuff to talk about, but not as high on the list as other things. Doug Ray is a professor of management and political science from Yale University. He joins us periodically to talk about the city of New Haven. Doug, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate your time. Now, before we let you go, Paul Bass and Umu Ramaya, just a few more things to get ready for this debate tonight. Paul, something new playing into all this. Campaign finance has actually rolled into this once again with candidates for mayor getting in and getting some money to help run their campaigns.
Right. We're going to see a test in New Haven this year on the city level that we saw on the state level last year, which is whether public financing can enable someone to run against someone who has a whole lot more money and have an equal shot. So last year, Linda McMahon ran for Senate, spent, what was it, $5 million? And Ned Lamont ran for governor.
$50 million.
Oh, I'm sorry, $50 million. It's off of the zero. Okay. And Ned Lamont way outspent Dan Malloy in the race for governor. But Malloy got enough public financing. He said, I don't need as much money as Ned Lamont, but I do need several million dollars. I need half of what he has to get my message out. And he was able to win. There was a point of diminishing returns with Linda McMahon. After she got her name out, no matter how much she spent on commercials, it didn't work, and Dick Blumenthal beat her. Now, New Haven was the first city in Connecticut to have a public financing system for mayoral races. But until this year, John DeStefano, who created that system, was the only candidate who ever used it. No other challengers qualified. This year, with a serious challenge looming, DiStefano decided not to participate. So by not getting public money, he's able to raise a lot more because public money limits how much you can raise from people. So he's just opening the bank, and city contractors, city officials, they're just pouring hundreds of thousands of dollars into DiStefano's campaign. His challengers, not Graves, but Carrickis and Dawson, are going for the public financing. So even with that public financing, though, DiStefano will outspend them something like $300,000 to $400,000 to $500,000 to maybe $50,000. He's going to have 6 to 10, as of the last filing, he had 13 times as much money as all his opponents combined. So the test here is going to be, if a challenger has a legitimate campaign responding to some desire in the community for a challenge, will that challenger be able to compete through public financing even though he can't match the dollars one-to-one, and how much is enough?
And does that amount of money and that difference in the amount of money mean in a mayoral campaign when, again, you're talking about a marginal cost per vote? If he won with 7,700 votes last time, I mean, if you have 13 times more money, Paul, this is a very interesting experiment, but it seems as though he might be able to get out the vote a heck of a lot more efficiently if that's how much each vote costs.
There's no doubt about it. So he's going to be spending $30 or $40 or $50 per vote. And he's going to have he already has a paid staff. He has polls. He's going to have commercials. None of the other candidates are going to have that. But it's an open question, John, whether that is an unbridgeable gap in city politics. I think it might be possible. It depends on other factors. So that's what we're going to test in New Haven this year. And given that New Haven is the state's test for municipal public financing, this is the year where the rubber is going to meet the road.
Boy, you guys always have interesting stuff happening in New Haven. It always seems to happen there. Now, before I let you guys go, Umar Ramayo, you're on the panel asking questions tonight. I'm obviously not going to ask you to telegraph all the questions you're going to ask candidates, but what are the things you're most interested in to find out from these folks?
We've touched on some of them. You know, we'll want to talk about Downtown Crossing. We'll want to talk about the New Haven Promise. Not all of the candidates have really expanded on whether or not they're going, you know, if they were to win this election. Are they fully in support of New Haven Promise? Would they, you know, are they interested in continuing to work with Yale on this? Reining in the budget is a huge issue. Carrickis has brought this up regularly. He calls himself a budget wonk. He's interested in looking at the very small details of the budget. And he's a smart guy. He can talk about the budget. So he's going to challenge DiStefano on that. That's something that we're going to be talking about. And then youth in New Haven, youth at work, youth engagement, community policing. This whole issue of violence, you know, there are three candidates running on platforms of anti-violence. And so that's a huge issue. They're appealing to some of the neighborhoods that are, you know, kind of outside of Yale. And so that's a kind of a shift in focus as well.
Yeah, we didn't even get a chance to talk about one important issue in all that is the reentry community, people coming back from prison into some of these communities, which is very important. But we'll have to leave it at there and maybe pick it up tonight at 7 o'clock. I want to thank Uma Ramaya from WNPR, who will be on a panel tonight asking questions of mayoral candidates. Thank you, Uma.
Thank you, John.
And thanks, of course, to Paul Bass from the New Haven Independent. Paul, this should be a lot of fun tonight. I appreciate you getting us involved once again.
Well, thanks for the chance to be on the show, and thanks for participating tonight in the debate, John.
And this debate, again, 7 p.m. at Metropolitan Business Academy. It's a free event, so you can go and take part and ask questions. Now, the New Haven Independent is sponsoring all this with other media organizations. You can find live blogging on newhavenindependent.org. That'll also be on our site, yourpublicmedia.org. NBC Connecticut is live streaming the event, so there's a lot of ways that you can interact. And it's not just for people in New Haven, because as Paul said earlier, New Haven and the other cities are so very important to everything we do here in the state. We'd love for you to get involved no matter where you are. You can always stay on top of the conversation where we live at WNPR.org if you want to send us an email. Tucker Ives produces our program. Katie Talarski is the senior producer. I want to thank Jonathan McNichol for engineering from New Haven today. This is Where We Live.